Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Miranda from Lizzie McGuire.
The dyke we always needed in our life.
Wearing bell bottoms in a clearly 2000 show. Come on, we get it.
It's always that edgy friend that's trying to show out, you know what it means.
What's poppin', chingona? Hello, hello.
As you guys have already noticed, we have a special guest co-host in the house named Daniel Luna.
Yay! How crazy, like 2 years ago, we barely knew each other.
Yeah.
And now I'm in your room.
2 years ago we met, and the next day I was like, you want to be on the podcast? Okay. All right, great.
And then 2 years later, I'm back. Y'all thought you saw the last of me.
Oh my God, are you the new Supreme?
I am the new Supreme. On this Halloween season.
It's going to be Cabronas y Chingonas now. All right.
Well, how exciting. I always wondered, like, anytime I heard your guys' episode, I was like, if I were ever to do a show, what would it be? And now here I am.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, review a show, I'd be like, what would it be? And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. This is going to be an interesting episode. We haven't been able to have guests in a long time because of the Ronies. So I'm excited to have one finally, especially because, you know, it does get a little bit repetitive when it's like two people who like kind of the same kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're going to switch it up today. We're going to talk about boys.
The boys.
The boys in
the fuck men.
Yes. After this, we're going back. We're having a cleanse. We're going to do a limpia. Like, it's going to be a whole ordeal.
I've been off men for a hot minute. How about you?
More than a minute, yeah.
Cool. Well, let's dive back into them for a second.
Okay, let's do it. Before that, for those people who aren't super familiar, I want to, I guess, give them a little bit of background on who you are. If you haven't already heard, Functional Friendships and Latinx Representation, I think is the title of our episode that we did in, like, at the end of 2018. With you and with Liz Perez, mm-hmm. And you're the creator of, and you and Liz are both the stars of Functional, the web series, which we're currently campaigning to get season two up and going. How has it been getting back into the works, the life?
Well, it's so surreal, just like thinking about it, like even just like being again on here 2 years ago, we were just barely filming season one, and then just meeting all these people, and then within that 2 year, I got to meet an amazing group that you actually unlocked for me. I was able to meet a whole community here in Los Angeles finally. And then just kind of seeing how the show resonated with everyone has just been such an amazing feeling. So going back into it, rewriting season two has been just so cathartic, I guess. So yeah, I'm super, super excited that we're finally, well, we're hoping to do season two. So that's actually what we're in the middle of right now. We're in the beginning stages of doing funding. When we did season one, it was self-funded, but this time around, unfortunately, a bitch is broke, so we definitely do need help, and we have been getting it, but we definitely do need any support we can get so we can hopefully get season two up and running.
That's right, people. So you guys need to check out the description. There is a link there for a GoFundMe, and contribute whatever you can. You know, like, there's not really a lot of like Latinx queer shows that are like based on real shit, you know, instead of just being this like token thing that gets thrown into random Netflix storylines. You know, like, it's, this is real shit. This is centering the people that we like to talk about. So just give what you can and listen to the rest of the episode, so you'll see that Daniel has some pretty solid points of views here. So
hopefully,
let's go. Other than what we're going to talk about today, what have you been watching?
Oh, jeez. Well, I'm trash and I just rewatch a lot of stuff. So since I've been working from home, I've just been watching The Simpsons 24/7. Like, I already know all the episodes.
The Simpsons is your shit.
Yeah, that is my go-to. Y'all want to do a trivia night with that? I'm your guy for The Simpsons, so love them. They raised me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know, not having cable and then you just throw on like whatever's on regular channels.
Oh, yeah, I didn't have cable. I'd have no Disney. Ironically, now they're on Disney Plus, but yeah, that's what I've been watching, so I have not really been Besides the show I'm about to talk about today, or the movie, but I haven't really been watching a lot of new stuff because it's just been, what's that? I did look it up. People who just rewatch stuff, it's like the anxiety levels. They just want to keep something they're familiar with, and that's what's been calming me down right now. So
shout out to Twitter. No, I feel you. The other day I was just wanted something in the background, and I put it on Disney Plus, and it was an episode. It was a kind of a couple seasons ago episode, and they were like talking shit about Disney. And then Lisa has a little caveat where she's like, "Unless Disney owns us now, in that case, we love Disney," or some shit like that. And so they, you know, they're notorious for predicting everything.
Oh yeah, they're calming me, especially during the election season. I've been watching all the election episodes, and I'm like, "Wow, this came out in 1993, and it's very, very, very relatable right now."
It's a little scary.
So yeah, but besides the Simpsons, I guess the TikToks that my roommate keeps showing me by force, but that's all I've been watching.
Your roommate sends me a lot of every single day.
I can't
log on to
we're
my
down
TikTok.
To like she can only text me one TikTok a day, and that's it.
I get at least 3 per day. That's hilarious. I just, like, you know, to veer off topic a little bit, I love TikTok.
Those listeners don't know, but me and Mike have this ongoing thing that I despise TikTok with a passion, and now my roommate's obsessed with it, and so now I have like nothing to do but watch TikToks when I go home.
I've been not watching as many lately, but I don't know what it's just like so easy. It's kind of like the anxiety thing you're talking about. It's like you don't have to sit there and watch a whole show. It's 60 seconds or less,
yeah,
and it's over. There's representation.
Well, actually, we did. I mean, yeah, going off topic, we did. I found that Bob's Burger Hispanic family,
oh, like the
Latinx representation I didn't know I needed in my
They've
life.
They've been all over the timeline. Yes. Absolutely.
I don't know where they're at, but that's, I'll support that family.
I'll put it in the show notes, or Rebecca will if she's so kind. Yeah, so that's exciting. I've been kind of in the same boat, though. Now that you mention it, I was rewatching Letterkenny. It's this weird Canadian show. It got picked up on Hulu from Awesomeness TV. It just goes to show, I guess, it these little shows can go and get picked up by bigger networks. That's kind of nice. Mm-hmm. But it's just like a feel good, funny Canadian show. If anybody ever wants to watch something like that, I like to rewatch shows a lot too, and it's awful for this podcast, so I apologize.
Oh, you know what? I do remember, besides The Simpsons, I've been watching, because RuPaul has taken over the world, and I've been watching back-to-back seasons of Drag Race. We started at the beginning of the... We've been having new episodes every week since the beginning of March. We've had season 12, then we went to All-Stars, and then we went to Canadians Drag Race, and now we're on Norwegian Drag Race. They're not stopping.
I can't believe it's become so worldwide.
Oh, yeah. Drag queens all over the world.
Well, you were a bit of a drag queen, but we'll talk about that a little bit.
Spoilers.
All right, well, let's get into our topics of the day. I think, what should we start with? We can start with the new stuff first. We usually start with old stuff first, but I'm going to start with the new stuff first, just and leave some the classic for later. So recently we sat together and I very reluctantly watched a film with you and a couple of our other friends called The Boys in the Band on Netflix. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, before I jump into it, I mean, to be fair, I understand your reasoning, but why did you not want to watch this?
I just was not in the mood to hear like a bunch of white dudes just nagging. I just was not there. I still kind of am not, if I'm being honest.
No, I definitely get where that part is. So yeah, we watched The Boys in the Band that just recently came out on Netflix. And yeah, that's definitely the best way I would describe it. It's like, what's it about? It's like a bunch of white gay guys in an apartment with problems, which... It's interesting because, like, I mean, yeah, if you don't really know the context, that definitely is how it comes off, which, to be honest, if I didn't know the context, I probably wouldn't watch it either. As a gay man myself, I'm kind of to the point where I don't want to really watch anything that I don't see myself in, even though I am gay. But watching this, knowing the context, which I'll kind of get into it, it's just, I don't know, I really, really did enjoy the story and kind of how telling it is. Before I kind of dive into it, I kind of want to do a little bit of a history of it. Just because of how important this show is. The show actually started as a production on an off-Broadway show back in what? got my notes here. Back in 1968, it premiered off-Broadway, and it was written by Mark Crowley, who actually passed away this year. The show was very groundbreaking because it came out, again, 1968, so 1 year before the Stonewall Riots, and the show is about queer men and issues, you know, within their lives and stuff, which, again, that was very groundbreaking because even 1 year before Stonewall Riot, during this era, it was still very illegal just to be homosexual, man or woman. Men and women couldn't dance with each other in public. Obviously, people had to go to dive bars and stuff. So it was just a very, very hard time. So for the fact that this came out in 1968 during that time was very crazy. It originally was supposed to be for 5 shows, but it actually lasted, and they ended up performing 1,001 shows.
Damn.
And just the fact of putting on the show, like, a lot of actors didn't even want to do it because they were uncomfortable acting and portraying gay characters on there. So it's very telling of that time. And then flash forward a couple years later, they did a couple of remounts of it. But most recently in 2018, they did do a remount with the cast that's actually in the show and the film production of it. And that also was groundbreaking because all of these actors are openly out gay men, which, I mean, even though it's Broadway, surprising that it really hasn't been done as much. So that happened. And so then they did the film, and all the actors that were in the original play are in the film as well. So it's just kind of interesting to see how 50 years in between we have progressed. But then when you kind of look at it through the lens, which I kind of want to dissect in a bit, it's just kind of, again, telling of each era and how their stories are still kind of this story, I guess, and their personalities is, you can take a lot.
They still parallel.
Yeah, they still parallel, and there's a lot you can take away, and different stuff you can take away from both eras, which is interesting. But anyways, the film itself, again, for those who are kind of watching it, I think it's important to know the premise, just because, again, if I would have just watched it without knowing it, I'd be like, oh my god, this is so boring, and I'm done. Because the film itself, I love it. I love it for the reason because they kind of filmed it in a way as you were watching a play. If you didn't know that, yeah, you'd probably be like, why are these bitches just sitting and talking for a hot minute? Because they definitely do that. But I appreciate it because they filmed it in the way that's still very true to how a play was supposed to be put up and stuff. But obviously there's like a filming aspect behind it. So within the show, there's 9 men. I think 9 men. Oh my gosh, I saw
that
it.
That sounds right.
Yeah, 9 men, not a lot of people.
A hearty amount.
But the premise of the show essentially is Jim Parsons, who is the main character. He plays Michael. He is holding a birthday party for Zachary Quinto's character, Harold. Both of them are very like elite white men. Very prissy, very sassy. He's talking with his friend, who is played by Matt Bomer, about, you know, how he wants... how he has to throw this party, but then also how he's like flaunting that he has so much money, or he's doing really well off for himself for being a gay man. And he's like, within the play or the movie, you see him change like what, 5 times into like nice clothes and stuff. So it's essentially just kind of flaunting, you know, that he's doing very well off. Then his friends come in, and each of these characters have their own, you know, quirks. But obviously these are men that hang out with each other because they, you know, they are their safe haven. They don't really have nowhere else to go, essentially. But the other actors are Andrew Reynolds? Andrew Reynolds as Larry. And who is the other one, who's actually his husband? Tuck Watkins. They're a couple, but they're very, very bicker. So the typical gay couple that comes to parties and just make things very awkward because they're always fighting with each other. So that's them. We have Robin de Jesus. My favorite, he originated the role of Sonny on In the Heights. He is Emroy, which is the, I guess, the typical flamboyant person that you would just see or associate any gay man to be, but, you know, obviously very unapologetically himself. And then Michael Benjamin Washington as Bernard, the one person of color in their friendship because they have to have one, but, you know.
That's okay.
They talk about it, though. And then we have Charlie Carver as Carver as the cowboy. So, yeah, I mean, the show is essentially of them getting together. Once they get together, you know, they just kind of, it's a birthday party, like the worst birthday party in the world. Like, you don't want to go there. You're like a fly, like, we're, as an audience member, you're kind of like a fly on the wall saying, get me out of here. But it's just, I mean, what's the best way to explain it without kind of spoiling it? But I mean, like, literally, it's like any gay party that you can think of where the friends are just bitches to each other.
Yeah, it's very, there's a lot of like tension, but it's also like you can tell they're kind of used to it.
Yeah. So it's a lot of that. And then what's kind of building around the party is that Michael's friend Alan is going to be arriving. He wanted to meet up with him for drinks, but coincidentally he's having a birthday party. His friend Alan is very straight, and he also paints him off to be more of a homophobe. I mean, because that's pretty much what everyone was back in the day, because they didn't really know how to react to that. So
you're either homo or you're homophobe.
Yeah, so it's like that. You know, it kind of starts off with, you know, as soon as his friends come, Michael's telling everyone that, you know, they have to calm down the campiness, they have to calm down the flamboyance, because he doesn't want his friend to be, you know, uncomfortable, or he's just afraid of what might happen. So it starts off with those conversations of, you know, it's like, well, this is our safe haven, now we have to calm it down, we have to tone it down. So that's how it revolves. His friend comes in, and then, yeah, I mean, that's just kind of, it's just kind of seeing how everyone's clashing with each other, and then... I mean, I just really don't want to spoil it a lot. I really just want to get into the themes of it, but it's pretty much a play where a lot of stuff is let out in the open. They talk about their relationships, their
it's struggles. A hard thing to spoil.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest, it's because it's like, it's very dialogue heavy. Mm-hmm. See, I don't like plays. I have gone to a couple of plays that I did like because mm-hmm. of the content. Which was to say, one that you've been in, one that Liz has been in, the content I love. Mm-hmm. But the style of a play where it's just dialogue heavy and it's kind of flat, it's just not for me. Mm-hmm. Which is why I didn't like the movie very much. But like you said, it's meant to be that way. It's on purpose. It's mm-hmm. not like, it's just like a play. But it is hard to spoil because it's like, it's just like a lot of feelings, and there's a lot of it that... like it's kind of like hidden behind the dialogue, mm-hmm. I guess you could say, like you were talking about, like what's really what you have to like know a lot of background about it to see is like what is actually going on mm-hmm. in these dynamics.
I mean, well, that kind of is what it is. I mean, it's like it's just a conversation that, I mean, us as queer people, we've already had these conversations with our friends, so, but now it's kind of just being replayed as different people. And it's always those conversations where it's like, obviously, you know that these friends, besides the one friend that came in, the straight friend, but these other friends, you know, they've obviously, you can very tell that they're the ones that would vacation with each other, that hang out with each other a lot. So these conversations become kind of pointed or against, or you put in the mix of a straight man in there, and now you're trying to tell your friends how to act, even though they're used to being this way around each other. So that's kind of the whole, like, plot of it, but then does explode to a point where the main character is being called out on who he really is against his friends. So that's what it is, and I definitely do recommend you guys to watch it and just kind of listen to the dialogues and stuff, because again, I mean, it doesn't probably sound as much as I'm saying right now, but once you watch it, especially as a queer person, you're like, oh yeah, I've had these conversations with my friend, or oh yeah, maybe I've had these thoughts with it. What I've really, really enjoyed, though, is just kind of looking at it. I guess it's just kind of like that slice of life situation where you're just kind of jumping in on someone's life on a given date and just realizing, either is this something about me? Can I resonate with it? Can I not? Or where are they going with this situation? So that's what I definitely enjoyed about it. The main reason I did enjoy about it, now kind of shifting gears a little, it's because this play or this movie, the only reason I knew about it is because I was so lucky to experience a brown version of this show, a queer brown men version of the show, or Latinx version, I mean, of this show, which is called Borracho, which is written by playwright Abe Zapata Jr., locally here in Los Angeles. The show originally came out back in 2019? Yes, 20. Yeah, the show originally came out back in 2019 as part of a festival. And then they did a remounting of it this year in February, which I actually was lucky to be part of the cast. And seeing both now, because I knew about I did the play before I even knew about the play that it was playing homage to. And seeing what I know now, that's where I kind of got my feelings invested, because I got to see this, but like with people I would hang out with, people who are Latinx and queer. And me as a queer man, and I've always had these conversations with them, it's like, it's really interesting to see, because I really don't have queer male friends. I only have queer friends that are women in my life, because for some reason, and that's kind of what this play is about. For some reason, whenever you put queer men with each other, they either want to kill each other or they want to fuck each other.
Usually both.
So when I got to be a part of a cast like that and kind of tell this story, it was just kind of something very telling for me of like, oh my gosh, I've been to this. I've seen this. And that's why it was just so amazing to see this represented in the way that I would get it. And so watching the movie, and I haven't really physically seen this play, but watching the movie, I was like, oh, okay, you get to see kind of different takes on what this story is about. The play is really amazing. I'm hoping they might do a remount later in the future.
They better. Yeah. Did it get cut short after all, or did you guys just finish your round of it before quarantine set in?
No, we were able to finish, thankfully.
That's great.
The run that we were supposed to do. So.
I'm sorry, but how sad is it that Netflix made a whole ass version of this produced by like fucking Ryan Murphy or whatever, and yet the Borracho play was way more entertaining. I felt so much more connected and to the characters, mm-hmm. and I felt like the story was so much more original. Like I guess I don't know what the original play is exactly like, mm-hmm. but in comparison, like having seen that rendition of it in comparison to the Netflix version, I'm like, really? You couldn't be a little more creative? Like, I don't know. It's just, you know, it was really, really, really cool to see it. I also, you know, in this is a completely, you know, a Latinx version of it, but it wasn't full of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. You know, like these people were people that I feel like I would meet. Because, you know, I do have a lot of gay male friends for some reason. And, yeah, I'm like, these characters are way more relatable. They are way more real.
Yeah.
So super shout out to Abe on that.
Oh, no. I mean, like, I remember when we did the first table read, I turned to him. I was like, oh, my God, this is real life. And so, no, it was really, really great to be a part of it and just kind of see how his homage was and then learning the play. But taking both of them, I think that they're just both amazing in the sense where it's like these are flawed characters at the end of the day. So, Borracho, again, if you guys hopefully have a chance, if it gets remounted again, definitely, definitely see it because it's just something where... Again, it's just like, that's how I always talk about how important representation is. Because had I not seen this show, I don't think I would have been invested in the movie. But the main reason is because I guess more of a selfish reason is because I was able to see myself in it. And so now I'm like, oh, okay, now I can, I guess, open myself more to, you know, other shows or, you know, something like that. But what I was getting about that is I think what I like about both shows, the show that I was in and then watching the movie, is just kind of seeing the themes between both. And that is, again, it's interesting when you see a show about gay men most of the time in mainstream, because it's always just about either they're the side character or they're some stereotype. The movie, yes, is kind of, I guess you can say they're full of stereotypes as well, but you can also see how interesting in this time period, watching it in 2020, this time period where it's very, it's still illegal to be, you know, who you are, to be openly gay out in public. So these friends are kind of confiding in themselves, have their own safe space. And it's so interesting that even they're a marginalized group, they within themselves are doing the same thing to each other. And the themes that I kind of got with both of them is that there obviously is a hierarchy within each other, which is just so interesting. Like, you would expect anyone who's queer, anyone who's gay, obviously we know that that's not true anymore, but, like, anyone who's queer or gay, since you're marginalized, you're going to be more understanding and respectful of other people's spaces who you are. But no, we, as gay men, we know that gay men can definitely be very racist, gay men can definitely be very sexist, and then gay men can definitely be very toxic because it's that unfortunate toxic male trait, masculine trait that is not even just with gay men, you see it in any type of group. So this show talks about, it doesn't talk about it like in your face, but you definitely do see that there's a hierarchy within friends where they're bickering at each other, but they do kind of talk about it in a point where it's like, I can say that to him because he's my equal, where the main character is going off on everyone because he thinks he's on top of the pyramid until he gets called out by his other friend who, again, in their world, that's their parallel equal. So that's just an interesting take that I'm just kind of like, I was like noticing just watching it and then going back to me being in the show, I was like, wow, that is like the group of friends. But then even taking it about it, I'm like, you know, you watch that and you kind of have to ask yourself, I was like, wait, do I do the same thing? Like, am I doing that to like my real life friends, or do I have that trait? And yeah, that's something I have to always ask myself. I'm like, I'm probably doing the same thing. And so it's just interesting just seeing that show. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. That's interesting that that's what they're doing to each other, even though you would expect it to be the complete opposite.
That's really interesting, because it was like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm used to seeing through the bullshit with these kind of characters, that when I was watching it, I didn't get the hierarchy thing at all, because the whole time I'm thinking, like, I was really immediately in the place of, like, wow, Jim Parsons' character is such a wounded animal who's just lashing out at everybody. Mm-hmm. That's the way that I saw him the whole time. I'm like, he's just really upset about his own life. And it wasn't until, like, you mentioned it that I was like, this dude, like, he's really, he thinks he's better than everyone else. And I didn't see that at all, because I don't think that he is, and he isn't, if we're being honest.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he thinks he is, so maybe that's, I don't know.
Yeah, he's flawed, but he thinks he's better because he's well off, but spoiler alert, he's not well off.
Yeah.
He gets called out on it. And yeah, so I just, like, that kind of stuff is just, like, wow. So when this show came out, obviously, it was revolutionary because, like, people are like, oh, I'm seeing myself for the first time. But it's also revolutionary now because it does tell a lot that, yes, as a country and as, you know, society, we've been able to evolve from 50 years, which is really great. But obviously, us as gay men, we're definitely still doing the same thing to each other. We're, you know, we want the same equal rights as our male white male components. But we're seeing now that people are getting that, all of a sudden they're doing the same thing to other marginalized groups. So the show is just revolutionary again, because it's a lot of gay men who are friends. But then
I get what you're saying, because I kind of have the same double-edged sword on my end, because I'm thinking to myself, like, it's great that we've gotten to a point that there's so much queer media that we can now make queer media about men, or about gay men being problematic assholes, instead of always trying to drive in the point that we're human too, which is what my next piece is kind of about. But it also pisses me off, obviously, that it's 2020 and we still have a token black guy in a movie. Yeah. You know, it's like, so it's just double-edged sword all around, right? Like, that's what media is these days. But yeah, like I said, there was also inspiration in different places. The fact that Borracho came out of it is fantastic. Your character in particular was, I guess I can't spoil it.
But, yeah, I can't spoil that.
But the way that they flipped that character that was in the original play and in the movie, like, that's next level shit, right?
Like, oh yeah, I'm just like, what? And then in the play, what it talks about, so I mean, obviously here we're talking about, well, that was my take on the movie. It's like, it's hierarchy. In the play Borracho that I was very lucky to be in, the biggest talking point was masculinity, or like how comfortable you are with your masculinity and femininity and just those roles in general. So that's another thing, is gay men, or just and men in general, unfortunately, we're like taught since we're born that we have to be strong, that we have to be tough. And then now that you come out as gay, you kind of have to redo that. And then in this show, my taking on it was like, wow, I've been these people at one point in my queer life. Like, when I came out, the first thing I did was like, oh, I'm gay, but I'm not that gay. So I was very self-hating, very like, I'm going to be very masculine. I'm going to go to the gym, and I don't do any of that queer stuff. Like, Drag Race, ew, barf, that's too gay for me. So that was me, which was in this show, that was Miguel. Instead of Mike, we have Miguel, and that was his character talking about, you know, he's very masculine, he's very well off, and he has to be strong because that's how we're taught, unfortunately. And then his group of friends are people who are flamboyant, loud, and again, unapologetically himself, which in that sense, you know, Miguel thinks he's better than that. He's higher than that. And he puts them down because they're like that, which, again, he thinks he's on this pyramid where everyone else is like, no, bitch, you ain't. You ain't shit.
Instead of like less of a wealth thing and more of a I'm a macho man, is like very.
And that is very real.
Very, very real in the Latinx community, especially like.
And it's just like, it's just like a never-ending story, which is it's just so hilarious that, I mean, that's always still ongoing, where we now see that obviously gay men can be anything, but also very toxic, and we can't grip that mirror sometimes and understand our insecurities and our emotions, because again, we're taught not to express that, and if we do, then we're weak, which is fucked up. And that's how that play kind of is. It's like, you know, because I am male, because I am like this machista or whatever, like I am better and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but you know, you're not living your authentic self at the end of the day, and you're not exploring all these sides. So yeah, watching, being an Abe show myself, but I kind of was like reading every character in my way, and I was like, I was one of these people at one point in my life where I came out, I didn't know, and the reason I was acting this way is because I put a barrier up because I thought society meant I was supposed to be this way. But then once I started loosening up, and you know, being, no pun intended, but once I started to like open myself up to emotions and stuff, you know, I was able to realize so many different sides of who I can be, and you know, just that simple stupid like construct of what is masculinity, what is femininity, and all that kind of stuff. Obviously there's still very much more room for me to grow, where it's also the same thing that you can say about any man who kind of is imposed to that question. Another thing I did kind of see, and this is actually something I've been like talking a lot to our friend Marisa lately, is that when gay men get assertive, it comes from a place where it's like, all my life I was very shut down. I wasn't able to be myself. And so now that I'm gay, I'm going to speak my unapologetic truth. I'm going to talk shit to my friends. I'm going to think I'm on the top of a pyramid because that's who I am, because I've been silenced this whole time. But what you're not understanding is that now that you've unlocked that, you have this privilege that you've always had that you didn't realize, and now you're using it against it. And so it's like, it's also that like, that toxic masculine trait where it's like, once a gay man becomes his fully evolved self and says, oh, I have a voice, I'm going to use it. It's like, well, yeah, it's easy for you to say it, but now you know you have marginalized people that you're not noticing that you're also shutting down, because you think now that you have a voice, your voice is better, you know, higher than anyone else's. And that's, again, male privilege that people don't accept, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's so many layers to it. It's like, once you get over the fact that you are marginalized in this way, then you have to get over the fact that you're privileged in all these other ways.
And it's like, but I can't be privileged because I'm marginalized. But,
yeah.
But
no.
But anyways, yeah, I was like going off tangent, but like, that's just, you know, watching these two shows, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just like going down so many wormholes in there. And that's, yeah, and I just like, I really do think it's, even though it is a white male show, I just think there is definitely stuff that is still can be said about. I mean, yes, now we know that back during those days are obviously, you know, where black people and brown people existed too, but why don't we know any of their stories? I mean, yeah, I mean, that's finally coming out to light. So obviously the show was created by an amazing playwright, but it was of his version of that time. So that's why, you know, it still kind of stayed the same way.
The original play is like, that makes sense. Like, he's writing his story.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, seeing the remount of the movie, it's just, yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I mean, I think people should watch it. But, I mean, we also live in a time, thankfully, that now we can watch it with, like, you know, obviously, like,
with a critical eye.
Yeah, with a critical eye. And then appreciate the good and the bad. And I think the bad is just the fact that, like, well, what would I say it would be bad? I mean, yeah, I'm bad because of the representation, I guess. Because, I mean, I'm just, again, myself, personally, I'm just at a point where, like, if I don't see myself in it, I don't care for it anymore. But that also does have its negatives, because then I'm, like, I lose the experience of other people's stories, you know? But, I mean, at the end of the day, what I liked about it is that these characters are very, very, very flawed, and it's very evident.
Yeah,
definitely. But I enjoyed it. And then, yeah, definitely, if you guys have time, absolutely watch it. And, you know, I think it definitely is an open, like, it just opens so many discussions that you can have, either if you are a gay man or friends with gay men, and just kind of notice those traits that people, for some reason, I don't know, we don't really discuss it because we don't really see it, unless you see someone else do it, then you're like, oh, do I do that? So that's what I really enjoyed about it. And then if you guys definitely have a chance, and hopefully gets remounted, fingers crossed, you guys can follow Q Youth Foundation. They're the ones who were putting up the show Borracho, and hopefully later on in the future, I think there's something coming down. I don't really want, I'm not mostly involved in that set, but I don't, you know, want to spoil stuff if there isn't. But
yeah, definitely, like, if you guys are anywhere near LA, if that gets remounted, like, you have to watch it. It's absolutely amazing, whether or not you know, like, the history of it and stuff. All right. Well, you gave me a really great segue into what I'm going to be talking about today, because you were talking about specifically like this relationship that is still kind of around today, but was way more strong back in the day, mm-hmm. of like being a man and your sexuality. Like those two things really shouldn't intersect as much as they did, especially like in the film Brokeback Mountain. Oh. Like the whole thing is literally about how being quiet, not having emotions, and like just doing the whole getting married to a woman, having kids thing, mm-hmm. and working, like that's it, that's what being a man is, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is very, very strict idea of it. And what I found out from Rafael Agustin actually on an episode, mm-hmm. was that this was based on the true story that it was based on actually had two Mexican men, in which case I was like, yeah,
I didn't know that,
which made 5,000% more sense to me, mm-hmm. and they should have gone that route for the film, but I guess, you know, then how could they have cast Heath Ledger? But it made so much more sense to me because I've been around men like Heath Ledger's character Ennis my whole life, you know, in Mexico, mm-hmm. these dudes that think that even talking too much, even saying a full sentence, like that's gay, mm-hmm. like these dudes are so repressed that they can barely open their mouths to speak, mm-hmm. it's the wildest thing. And obviously not every like Mexican man is like this. I'm saying like these are like dudes who are old school, who were around in the 60s and have been on like in little farm towns forever.
You
like,
don't have anything to say, I don't say it at all.
Exactly. Use your fist, motherfucker. it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome to think about it through that lens of like, this is based on these dudes, right? Like, and like, it was really, really fun to rethink about it in that way. But the story broke my mind. I mean, I think most people at this point have probably seen it. If you're going to see something like Brokeback Mountain. Oh. It came out in 2004. It was directed by Ang Lee. He's an incredible director who's really, really good at kind of like putting you in a space and time. Like he just drops you in there. And he did that for this. I think this is like 1968 Wyoming or something. And these two dudes who don't know each other go get a job on a Brokeback Mountain to herd sheep, and they end up somehow falling in love with each other. Mm-hmm. It's wild. But throughout their, and literally most of their exchanges, especially during the beginning, they're always like, within the context of their conversation, is they're talking about limitations, what has limited them their entire life, whether it's religion or their fathers or their families. Like in every piece of like everything that they've talked about, they're like talking about how they've been limited. And there's even like a line that Ennis has after he finally kind of opens up to Jack. He's like, well, that's the most I've spoken all year, or something like that. Like, it's really, really wild how repressed these men are, and how like just talking to each other for a couple of minutes allows them to just break open, right? And you get down in a tent.
They're so repressed, they're gay now.
So these dudes do what they do, what the men and boys in the band did not have to do, which like they lived in such a repressed and awful time. So the fact that they were themselves at all, even when it was just them together at all, like in this little group, was kind of something that these two characters could have never even imagined, right? Mm. They both go on to go get married and have children.
They like live in small town compared to like them in New York City in a repressed time. This is like a small town.
Yeah, so they couldn't even fathom a New York City. Yeah. Like they go and they try to live separate lives and just kind of go through the motions. Mm-hmm. But you know, after a certain amount of time, like there, it's very obvious that you're just not happy. It reminds me of a lot of like real grown people that I've known in my life who, you know, I grew up in Texas. Mm-hmm. So like I would come to know older people who came out super late in life and would have people in their lives who would be like trying to push them back to the hetero side.
Yeah.
Because those people in their lives would think like, you know, you've done it before, you can do it again. Yeah. And I was just like,
you weren't like this before. It's like, well,
it drives me nuts because it's like, dude, I'm sure they were miserable. Like, are you not thinking about, like, how miserable a person has to be to, like, yeah. actually have the guts to come out, mm-hmm. especially that late in life? And that's kind of what I kind of connect to this movie on, right? Like, I don't normally watch movies with two white dudes and a star in it, like, but, you know, back in the day, I didn't have a whole lot to go off of. But this is what that reminds me of. These guys, they have to go, and then eventually they go, like, they talk about their very specific traumas. Ennis's dad, he literally, like, to scare the gay out of his sons, mm-hmm. went and showed him the dead body of a gay man. Like, it's very traumatic stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, then Jack, who is, of the two, like, really more open about his feelings, mm-hmm. like, more... He's the guy that wants to run away together. He's the one that's, like, not as afraid. He wants to... He's actually putting effort into pursuing this yeah. relationship, which doesn't work out, obviously. But he then becomes the bad example, right? Like, later in life.
The floozy.
Well, he gets... he gets presumably murdered.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a... Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, we don't really know how he died.
Yeah, they leave it so open-ended, but it's like there's an abundance of clues mm-hmm. where you kind of get the point, right? It's really, really heartbreaking, and it is ultimately a problematic depiction, right? Like, when you have that over and over, people that are watching it are just going to think, like, oh, I'm bound for tragedy.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things where it was like this film was so big, so like it was, you know, it was Oscar worthy yeah. and it had these really big actors who were presumably straight. I don't like to assume those things because who isn't closeted in Hollywood? And so they, you know, it brought so much attention like to the cause. 10 years later, gay marriage was legalized.
Yeah.
I don't know. Not that it had a direct correlation, but I can't help but to think, I've always argued that media has an effect on people's ideas of marginalized communities or like it. So I can't help but think that spurred off more media, that spurred off ideologies that were more positive and,
yeah,
you know, like,
'cause it makes people start thinking about it. It's like, wait, is this what it is like? I didn't know.
In 2004, that's a net positive, right? Like,
yeah.
In 2020, stop. but yeah, so that I just think that this film definitely made such a difference. And then also Anne Hathaway's in it, so that's cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why I watched it before I was gay when I watched it already. But I was like, oh, it has Anne Hathaway. I'm going to watch it. Mike and I were talking about this before. We had different takes on the movie. When I first watched it, I was like a stupid 18-year-old that just came out, and I was like, oh, I just want to watch porn. And it wasn't. And so I was kind of disappointed. But then when I watched it again, maybe a year later, like paid attention to the plot, and I'm like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, I was telling you about how there used to be a lot more movies about queer men, mm-hmm. and I would watch them because to me, like, anything gay was cool.
Yeah.
And, I used to watch them with the opposite mentality. I was like, oh, I hope this is a good story. And then it was just softcore porn. So glad that we have moved past that.
We are the one.
now there's really bad, only women, loving women who are white movies.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. We're making progress.
Shout out to Portrait of Lady on Fire. No, that was not bad though. That was really good.
Going back to what about Brokeback Mountain, yeah, it definitely is. And like, I forget about that plot sometimes. And I'm like, oh yeah, well, I mean, obviously they act this way. They're already obviously, like, you know, not really super late in their life, but I mean, like, old enough that they're like, well, they kind of had to suppress that because again, that's how toxicity is born, because you have to repress a lot of stuff, and then once you repress it for so long, you become so bitter at the world, and then you just again kind of take that and push it off on someone else, and that is toxicity is like of the society, unfortunately. Like, I don't want to sit here and, like, I do because I am a man, but I don't want to sit here and be like, oh my god, woe is me, I am a man. But you know, obviously there is those woes that it's like we can't get our past ourselves at all, that because we're always so suppressed, we're always thinking of how we should act, that we never have the chance to think of, well, how is my female counterpart doing? Like, what are my female friends? How are they, you know, like, because you're just so involved in yourself of making sure that you're doing what society's telling you to do that you can't even, like, think of anyone else at that point, unfortunately.
And also, you just, how are you going to enjoy yourself when you, how are you going to live your life and, like, you know, make this weird time on Earth worth it if you're just thinking the whole time about how much shit sucks for you? Like, yes, it does, but also, like, the people who are doing this to you are gonna win if you don't enjoy yourself for a fucking minute. Like, for God's sakes, go to that Brokeback Mountain, go to that tent, let's just do this. So ultimately, like I said, I don't want another Brokeback Mountain. It gave you two options, right? You can either end up like Ennis, alone in a house by himself forever, just mourning this man, or you can end up the man who, like, you know, gets, like, hurt really badly and ultimately, like, murdered for being who he is. Like, those two options are not your two options. They're just not. And, like, you know, not for gay men at the moment, like, not in the same way that it used to be, but you're kind of right. Like, we have to think about other people. What about, like, trans people are getting married all the time, every fucking day. So, you know, yeah, sometimes you need to take the privilege that you've earned now and go and help other people. So I feel you on that. Whew, that's heavy.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Just solved male toxic culture.
You're welcome, the USA.
We did it.
Just gonna give it a little clap.
So much emotions. We aren't allowed to, like, emotions are gay.
Yeah, but I have to go back to this. I'm sorry, but that's a big thing that you do explore in Functional.
Oh, thank you.
So, like, I'm guessing, like, you're going to be continuing that again, too, once, hopefully, season two happens.
Yes.
Like, this is, again, like, we have the opportunity now to overcome these tropes on TV and these stereotypes and the only thing that gets greenlit. So, like, I don't know. I'm just going to direct you guys again to GoFundMe for Functional Season 2. Link in our bio and description and our website and probably on our social media.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one of the biggest things I mean, like, it's just so funny because, like, I mean, like, I appreciate all, like, the compliments that I get for Functional, but it's like, well, yeah, I wrote it, but also I'm like, this is real life. Like, this is the life I live. So it's not like, you know, and it's not just mine either. It's like, this is how it is to be queer nowadays, thankfully, where, you know, all most of my friends are queer women. And that's what the friendship, I mean, that's what the story is about. The story is honoring the love you have from your friends. Because most of the stuff that we're seeing on media is just like, either woe is me, I'm gay, I can't find love, or I am nothing unless I find a soulmate kind of situation. Where Functional talks more about, like, this is the person that you're with all the time. This is your friend, or this is the family. This is, like, another type of love that's bringing you either to be the best person or the best version of you, who you are. Obviously, Functional, if y'all have seen it, it's about two best friends that are just getting shit wrecked, which, who has not done that if you're gay? But in the, you know, obviously both of them are kind of flawed. They're just trying to figure it out, but obviously very, you know, much together. And in season two, I don't want to give too much spoilers, but I'm really excited. Season two, the best way I want to describe it is season one is obviously like the rager at a bar. That's the best way to describe for season one. Or season two is the hangover.
Oof.
So now, like, they have to figure out the mistakes that they did to each other or themselves. And now you're going to find both of these characters apart from each other and how they're going to deal with it either mentally or how are they going to deal it, I guess, emotionally. And that's definitely something that I'm really super excited to kind of always write now. You know, especially the, putting myself back as either Guillermo, the character, but then also seeing Liz's character, Jasmine, seeing how, you know, both of them are kind of reacting to these kind of situations. And yeah, they get to talk about feelings and they get to talk about their family. So
that's great. That's fucking awesome. We are progressing and all that shit. I'm stoked on it. If you haven't already, yeah, go watch Functional for free on, like, YouTube, and it's also on Reverie.
Reverie, yes.
Yeah. So definitely check it out, and you'll see why you need to donate whatever spare change you have over to their GoFundMe.
Oh, sure. And actually, we were chosen to film at the OC Fiesta next week. So it's a virtual OC Fiesta film fest.
You're streaming there.
Huh?
You're streaming on there.
Yes. Actually, we actually will be screening at the 2020 OC Film Fiesta, which will be running from October 15th to the 25th, and it's going to be along with a bunch of other movies. We're scheduled as a feature because they're going to do the whole season one, and I believe we will have a Q&A. We don't know the information yet, but I'll, once keep I have it, posted. I'll post it. I'll definitely keep y'all posted for it.
Well, speaking of, where can we follow you on social media?
Oh, well, you can follow the series that I wrote, Functional Series. You can find it on Instagram, Twitter, the YouTube. And you can follow me if you want to just see my hot mess of a life at luna.tico on Instagram and Twitter.
All right, awesome. And we'll link everything on the show notes. But yeah, definitely check out the work. Check out, you know, all the other topics that we talked about today, especially if you're a queer man. I know there's a lot of queer men that like listen to our show, and we're always talking about lady stuff, so I'm sure this might be like a nice breather for you. We'll try to do it more often.
I think it's important for like queer men just to acknowledge the privilege that we have, but also acknowledge that the main barrier is our emotions, and it's us, and if we don't get past ourselves, how can we help our female friends?
So. Yeah, and our trans friends and our like non-binary friends, and yeah, like we're no longer, we can make ourselves a focus, but we are no longer the main concern. Like, let's go.
Correct.
All right, well, thank you so much for co-hosting this episode.
Thank you, so exciting.
It's been nice to like have somebody like, you know, to record face to face. That's nice. Yes. Don't get to do that very often. All right, guys, stay safe. Follow Daniel, support the GoFundMe if you can, and thank you for listening all the way to the end.
Wear a mask.
Bye, guys.